Hello and welcome to this podcast focusing on the treatment of multiple myeloma. In this episode, which includes excerpts from a recent educational symposium, Drs. Philippe Moreau, Suzanne Lynch, and Shaji Kumar discussed therapeutic innovations in this disease state. This activity is provided by PER and supported by an educational grant from Sanofi. Dr. Moreau begins by discussing whether every transplant-eligible patient should receive quadruplet therapy for newly diagnosed multiple myeloma.
And now let's speak about triplet or quadruplet. So when you're looking at the European guidelines that are proposed by Dr. Dimopoulos and colleagues, you see that when patients are eligible, yes, we are always proposing autologous stem cell transplantation prepared by MEL 200. And for induction, we are also proposing systematically a quadruplet induction, ISA-VRD or daratumumab VRD. And you see that for maintenance, we have two options, either lenalidomide single agent or the combination of lenalidomide and daratumumab. So why we are proposing this quadruplet combination systematically, if possible, if you have access in your country? Because we have four phase three trials that looked at triplet versus quadruplet in transplant eligible patients. The first one was the Cassiopeia study a long time ago. We have now a median follow-up of 100 months, and we are going to update the results very soon, comparing VTD versus VTD plus daratumumab. That was the first quadruplet combination approved, VTD-DARA. The Perseus study looked at VRD with LEN instead of thalidomide in order to reduce the toxicity of thalidomide and the neurotoxicity. You see that the follow-up is shorter, 4 years median follow-up. The German study comparing VRD versus VRD plus isatuximab as well. And recently, the Ischia study was published a few weeks ago, a prospective comparison of KRD versus KRD plus isatuximab. Unfortunately, KRD is not approved, in fact, in Europe, because CARFIL is not approved as part of frontline treatment. You see that we have different follow-up and also four studies, but four different endpoints. And this is the study design of Cassiopeia, VTD, both before and after stem cell transplantation, or DARA VTD, a very large study, more than 1,000 patients. The primary endpoint was MRD, stringent CR before maintenance, and we looked at MRD negativity for all patients, 1,000 patients, before maintenance. And you see this big difference in favor of the DARA arm of the study. And this depth of response translated into a significant progression-free survival. This is the last update analysis of Cassiopeia, and with a very strong hazard ratio, and with a long follow-up, we also have an overall survival benefit for the quad versus the triplet. And Cassiopeia is the only study with an overall survival benefit in transplant-eligible patients. I mentioned that we have a very similar design with Perseus, VRD instead of VTD, both before and after stem cell transplantation. In the VRD arm, patients did receive lenalidomide maintenance until progression. And in the DARA arm of the study, patients did receive a combination of LEN plus daratumumab. Primary endpoint, progression-free survival, that is in favor of the quad combination. You see this big difference, a very strong hazard ratio as well, 58% reduction in the risk of progression or death. And at 4 years, the PFS in the DARA arm of the study is 84%. And again, these are the best results ever reported in a phase three study for transplant-eligible patients. MRD negativity is in favor of DARA-VRD. You see overall the MRD negativity rate at 10 to the minus 5, 75%. And two-thirds of the patients as well are reaching 10 to the minus 6. And that's really amazing to see those incredibly good results. We are looking also in the Perseus study at sustained MRD negativity during 1 year, 2 years, and we will have a longer follow-up, sorry, soon proposed. And you see that the rates of sustained MRD negativity at 10 to the minus 5 are also very high after 12 months or after 2 years. 55% of the patients are remaining MRD negative. And this is the PFS by sustained MRD negativity at 2 years, 10 to the minus 5. You see that when the patients are reaching sustained MRD negativity, they are not progressing. This is true with the quad combination, but this is also true with VRD alone. And you see that VRD sustained, we have a very high rate of patients that are maintaining their response. But the number of patients reaching sustained MRD negativity is much higher, obviously, with the quad combination. We also have the German study, HD7, that looked at VRD versus VRD plus isatuximab, followed by either a single or, for a very small group of patients, a tandem stem cell transplantation. And the study, the primary endpoint, was MRD negativity after induction. And the study met its primary endpoint. And at 10 to the minus 5, there is a significant difference, and the depth of response is significantly increased with ISA plus VRD. And same story, this translated into a better progression-free survival. So the phase III studies that we do have now published are showing that the MRD negativity rates, 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 6, are in favor of the quad combination. The progression-free survival across trials is always significantly improved. We have very high rates of sustained MRD negativity. Only one study did show an overall survival benefit, but we need to wait for a longer follow-up in the other trials. And there was really no safety issue with the addition of a CD38 antibody to a triplet combination. So that's why quad combos are now standard of care and proposed into the international guidelines, European guidelines, but also the NCCN guidelines, for example. Still, we do have some important issues. What is the optimal maintenance? And this is a debate. And during this meeting, you are going to hear about LEN or LEN plus a CD38 antibody. And we only have one study that is comparing prospectively in the setting of a quad treatment, lenalidomide versus LEN plus isatuximab. That's a German study. The PI is Mark Raab. Each time that I'm seeing Mark, I'm asking him, when do we have the results of this second randomization? Because this is the only study that will really establish two drugs versus only one. And, well, Mark told me that he will probably show the results very soon, we hope at ASH, for example. The Perseus study looked as well at two drugs in the Dara arm, but as you can see on the slide, there is no second randomization to isolate the true impact of daratumumab during the maintenance phase. What is interesting in this study is that after 1 year of sustained MRD negativity, daratumumab could be stopped after 2 years of treatment in combination with lenalidomide. So this is the first trial establishing two drugs, but proposing to stop one drug during maintenance based on MRD assessment. And you discussed this morning about the important role of establishing MRD in routine practice outside of clinical studies. And you discuss about flow cytometry or NGS. And this is, to my opinion, very important to be developed in all countries with standardized technology. Another important issue is, can we adapt, in fact, the treatment according to MRD negativity? That's a very important question. We have the tool now to look at the depth of response. So why not using MRD to drive the treatment? And that was the goal of the MIDAS study, a very provocative trial, even for the French group, because that's 30 years that we are working on autologous stem cell transplantation again and again and again. But we have proposed, after a quad induction, to look at MRD before stem cell transplantation. And for those patients MRD negative, what we are calling the standard risk group at the upper part of the slide, we wanted to compare autologous stem cell transplantation, our standard of care, versus consolidation without high-dose therapy. And for patients with a high-risk disease, patients remaining MRD positive after a very strong induction, we want to compare a single versus a tandem stem cell transplantation. And you see that we have two-thirds of the patients that are MRD negative after this induction with isatuximab and KRD. And one-third of the patients are remaining MRD positive. So we were able to compare arm A without high-dose therapy versus arm B in a large patient population, overall roughly 500 patients. And we were able to compare 100 patients with a single or 100 patients with a tandem stem cell transplantation in arm D. And what are the results? The primary endpoint was MRD negativity 10 to the minus 6 before maintenance. And you see that for patients MRD negative, there is really no difference in terms of MRD negativity rates, 10 to the minus 6, when comparing high-dose therapy and autologous stem cell transplantation versus consolidation without high dose. So this is very provocative, you know. It means that potentially you could defer stem cell transplantation in some patients with a very, very good response. But to my opinion, we need to wait a longer follow-up to look at progression-free survival. And as well, when comparing single versus tandem, there is no difference in terms of MRD negativity rates, suggesting maybe that we don't need tandem stem cell transplantation when patients are receiving upfront a quad combination. Another important issue is with the quad combinations, do we need or what is the outcome of patients with a high-risk disease? And you know that we have 25%, 30% of the patients at time of diagnosis with high-risk, according to the new definition of the International Myeloma Society. And in the Perseus study, that is probably one of the best schedule with DARA-VRD, you see in red that there is nevertheless a difference when comparing patients with standard risk disease and high risk disease. We are not able to overcome this poor prognosis, let's say, at the time of diagnosis. It means that probably in the future, we should design studies focusing on high risk patients and not to treat all patients the same. We need to improve this PFS curve for patients with high risk disease. And the last point, last important issue, are we going to use in the future new immunotherapies to treat our patients? And definitely, you know that we do have some ongoing studies. The first one, important one, is the CARTITUDE 6 trial for transplant-eligible patients. We are going to compare. The control arm is roughly the Perseus design, quad combination, autologous stem cell transplantation, but looked at the maintenance. The maintenance is only LEN. That's not LEN-daratumumab in the CARTITUDE 6. And the experimental arm is proposing ciltacel after a quad induction. This study is very important because it could, let's say, kill autologous stem cell transplantation. But that's not ciltacel single agent. That's not one and done. That's ciltacel followed by 2 years of maintenance. So that's something that, well, we never did, in fact. The study completed its enrollment. And look at the primary endpoints. We have two dual primary endpoints. One is PFS, I would say, as always, but one is MRD And maybe we are going to have the results within the next 2 years. A very important study for sure. And why not using a bispecific antibody and not a CAR T? And this is the design of the ongoing French study that is looking in the control arm at the Perseus schedule with len-daratumumab maintenance, and in the experimental arm, we are trying to use a bispecific antibody targeting BCMA, elranatamab, in combination with lenalidomide. And again, we have those primary endpoints of PFS and MRD negativity. And I thank you for your kind attention.
In the next segment, Dr. Lynch compares daratumumab and isatuximab, including how delivery method affects the patient experience.
How do you choose between daratumumab and isatuximab? Of course, we all know that the anti-CD38 monoclonal antibodies are part of the quadruped regimens for transplant-eligible and the transplant-ineligible patients. But we have some emerging data using also isatuximab subcutaneously via an on-body device platform. We have different routes of administration, intravenous, subcutaneous, and also an on-body device injector. And you all remember the time of daratumumab when the infusion took 8 hours and we even split the dose over 2 days. Subsequent dosages, 3 to 4 hours, a lot of chair time and difficult to manage, especially when you have a busy practice. Infusion-related reactions occurred quite often. In 30% of the patients, I remember that we pre-medicated our patients with montelukast and dexamethasone on the day of infusion and the day after. Again, very intensive chair nursing time. Moving daratumumab to a subcutaneous application was a huge step forward, more convenient for our patients and more easy to manage. We had a fixed dosage with 1,800 milligrams subcutaneously, administration time decreased from almost 8 hours to 3 to 5 minutes, and infusion reactions, and I think this is what we sometimes forget, decreased from over 30% to around 10% of our patients. And the Columba trial showed that there was no decrease in the response rate and also no change in the PK. So now, interestingly, we have isatuximab also available subcutaneously via an on-body device. It's a wearable automatic injector, hands-free, and the infusion-related reactions decrease to 1.5%, and also it's working pretty well. And since most of you have not seen how that works, here's a little bit the structure, how it works. So it's a sterile single-use wearable injector, and with an adhesive, it's attached to the abdominal wall. It's filled with isatuximab, and then you press a button, and automatically isatuximab will be injected, and you can follow in a window how the injector empties and isatuximab is given subcutaneously. So this on-body device was tested similar to daratumumab and the Columba trial in the phase 3 Iraklea trial that was already mentioned. And it was given in combination with pomalidomide and dexamethasone in the on-body device, but also IV. And as you can appreciate, there was no difference in the overall response rate with almost 50% VGPR. What is of note is the decrease in the infusion-related reactions. You can see it's pretty small, but it decreases from 25% to 1.9% in the on-body device, so very safe and for our patient. We don't have direct comparison trials between isatuximab and daratumumab, so that's why I have to take the punchline already. I'm probably not able to answer the question or my topic, but we can compare indirectly and have several trials such as Cassiopeia, Griffin, Perseus using daratumumab and the GMMG using isatuximab, missing here the Eskia trial. But the trials show when we compare the CD38 here in green containing arm versus the comparator arm that the addition of CD38 increases the progression-free survival significantly with a hazard ratio between 0.42 and 0.7. Also, Dr. Moreau also already mentioned the MIDAS trial in which ISA-KRD was given, and in an MRD-guided randomization, continued ISA-KRD versus stem cell transplant did not show any difference in MRD negativity, showing that ISA-KRD is a quite potent regimen. So this is a summary of newly diagnosed multiple myeloma trials without stem cell transplant. And what you appreciate here is also Maya, Imros, Cepheus, Alcyon, all trials that include CD38 monoclonal antibody, with Imros here, the trial that is using isatuximab in an older patient population up to 80 years and a quadruplet. They all showed a progression-free survival benefit when we are going for the hazard ratio towards the CD38 arm. But when we look for Maya, Imros, Alcyon, almost a doubling of the progression-free survival, and also looking for the MRD negativity here, benefit using ESA and Cepheus using Dara, there's almost a doubling or at least 20% increase in the MRD negativity rate, so very impressive data. Here are two trials, Cassiopeia and Auriga, using CD38 post-stem cell transplant as a maintenance. And the Cassiopeia trial, Dara was randomized against observation, and you can see the PFS hazard ratio is 0.53, so very impressive data into the benefit of daratumumab. And in the Auriga trial, DR, Dara Revlimid, was compared versus Revlimid maintenance. And also here you can see an impressive increase in the progression-free survival, and especially in the MRD negativity, more than doubling. So let's make a case for daratumumab. If you're in favor, we have a lot of data in the frontline setting. Griffin, Perseus, Cassiopeia, Meyer, Cepheus, and Griffin, and especially Perseus, showing that the MRD negativity rate is very high, especially in combination with stem cell transplant. For daratumumab, we have a long track record, and most of us feel very comfortable to give daratumumab a well-established short infusion time, global adoption, and embedded in a multiple different regimens, Dara VRD, Dara RD, KD, or also KRD. Let's make a case for isatuximab, and you can see the differences are not very striking. Also, ESA was tested in several clinical trials in the transplant-eligible, ineligible setting. Here, Imros, again, for older patients, and the GMM-GHD trial in the transplant-eligible setting, but also Icaria for the Ikema for the relapse-refractory setting that tested ESA in combination with pomalidomide and with carfilzomib. And last but not least, we have now the Eraclia trial showing that the on-body device is associated with a lower infusion-related reactions and consistent PK and efficacy with a IV infusion. So the on-body device, I think, is interesting, not only because of the low infusion reaction, but also minimal or no chair time, simplified workflow, potentially taking it at home. And we need to decide, you know, whether we use ESA or DORA, probably based on frontline and also transplant-eligible, ineligible settings, and what's the patient preference. But I think in general, we are all aware that there's a similar magnitude and benefit across the regimens, and not real striking differences between ESA and DARA in terms of response rates for our patients. Differences when we use what is probably driven by trial design, backbone regimen, maybe patient population and patient's preference.
Next, Dr. Kumar discusses how to sequence CAR T cell therapy, bispecific antibodies, and antibody-drug conjugates in relapsed refractory multiple myeloma.
Thank you, Mohamed, and good morning, everyone. So I guess we'll talk about the new ABCs of immunotherapy, right? The ADCs or the bispecifics or the CAR-Ts. And I don't think, you know, there's plenty of data in terms of what we have done over the past few years, but I'm not sure the data is going to necessarily translate the same way in the future as the way we use these agents evolve. So I think this is going to be an ongoing question, ongoing debate, that's probably going to continue to change as new data comes in. But generally, when you talk about immunotherapeutic strategies, and I think this is what's arguably made a significant change in the disease treatment paradigm over the past decade, now we have the naked antibodies. We just talked about the anti-CD38. We'll be hearing quite a bit about the bispecific antibodies, antibody-drug conjugates, and CAR-Ts throughout the course of this COMI. So when you talk about the myeloma treatment paradigm, again, the question about sequencing the different immunotherapies comes up in the context of relapsed disease. In the newly diagnosed, again, the clinical trials are still ongoing. They have not quite gotten to the newly diagnosed stage at this point in time. So the big question comes, you know, when you have that patient in the first, second, third, or fourth relapse, how do we use the currently available immunotherapies? So let's take a look at the data that's available in terms of the efficacy of these different immunotherapeutic modalities. So obviously, we have data from both Ide-cel and Cilta-cel, both BCMA-targeted CAR T-cells, both in the late-line relapse disease as well as in the earlier lines of therapy. First relapse for Cilta-cel, second relapse onwards for Ide-cel, where phase 3 trials have compared them against standard of care. But one thing that is very clear, when you look at all these different studies, the CAR T cells can give you response rates of up to 95%+, and you look at the data from with the Cilta-cel in the CARTITUDE 1 and 2 and 4 trials. And the progression-free survival somewhere in the range of, again, 18 to 36 months. What about bispecific antibodies? We have three of them approved that is targeting BCMA. That's the teclistamab, elranatamab, and dilvaceltamab. And then we also have talquetamab that's targeting GPRC5D. Again, one thing that's very interesting when you look at this data is the irrespective of whether you're looking at BCMA or GPRC5D as a target, across all the bispecifics, we are looking at a response rate of roughly about 60 to 70%, with some differences obviously related to the specific patient population as well. Now, obviously, you know, unlike CAR T, and maybe even with CAR T, you saw how the design of the clinical trials are already looking at maintenance approaches beyond CAR T. And in the same vein, you can see that many of the bispecific antibodies are moving forward in the context of combinations, such as what we saw with the Majestic 3, where the combination of teclistamab and daratumumab was associated with a significantly improved progression-free survival and overall survival. Now, the third group of drugs is obviously the ADCs, and there is Glivia 1 that's approved in the clinic. There are several other ones that are in development right now. And we know from both the single-agent studies as well as the DREAM 7 and 8 randomized phase 3 trials that belantamab can be combined with standard of care agents like bortezomib or pomalidomide, leading to significant improvement in the progression-free survival as well as improved overall survival. So, you know, it's a problem of plenty because we have, you know, lots of choices that we didn't have before. The question that comes up is how do we sequence these different therapeutic strategies, platforms, or targets, whichever way we look at it. So I think, you know, just like we do for all patients with relapse disease, I think the same things come into play. You know, what are the prior treatment exposures these patients have? What kind of toxicity have had they with prior therapy? What is the underlying risk? Is it cytogenetic risk, functional high risk, extramedullary disease? How do we incorporate the frailty or performance status into this decision making? And finally, I think this has been brought up several times this morning, is the patient preference and treatment logistics, which obviously plays an important role. And one thing that I think we have some data is the impact of use of one drug class on the use of another drug class after that. I think this is probably much more important in the setting of these different immunotherapies or T-cell engagers. So let's take a look at what data we have, right? So if you look at the use of Ide-cel after BCMA-targeted therapy, this is data from a study from a couple of years ago. You can see that the overall response rate does fall with Ide-cel with the use of a prior BCMA-targeted therapy. And there seems to be some differences in terms of what kind of prior therapies that you have had. What about the data with the use of bispecific antibodies after prior BCMA-directed therapy? Again, you can see the same pattern. You can see that there's a decrease in the overall response rate of the about 60 to 70% response rate falling down by about 10 to 15% when you use the teclistamab after a prior BCMA-targeted therapy. And the same thing is reflected in the progression-free survival as well. Now, it's also important to think about the mechanisms of resistance when you think about using these different or thinking about how to sequence these therapies. We have already seen in the context of both CAR T cells and bispecific antibodies, there's loss of antigen, there's mutations involving the target, especially BCMA. We certainly see that the development of the BCMA mutation seems to be much higher in the context of prior bispecific antibodies rather than in the context of CAR T cells. So something to keep in mind. We also know that there's very little in terms of at least indirect evidence suggesting that there's not a lot of BCMA mutations that are happening in the among patients who are being treated with ADCs. So again, I think, you know, if you put all this data together, given that the CAR T cells give you the deepest response, the longest duration of response amongst all these different immunotherapies, our preference is to use the CAR T cell first when feasible. Of course, if it is not, then the bispecific antibody combinations in the earlier line, or maybe in combinations in single agent in later lines. And I think ADCs can certainly be considered in this sequencing, primarily because, again, in combination, but keeping in mind the fact that they don't need to engage the T-cell immunity to the same extent as the CAR T-cells and bispecifics. But at the bottom line, we want to try and change both not only the target, but also the platform that we are targeting or using. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.